I think this passage is quintessential Robinson, and in fact that Robinson has been writing the whole book to get here. Obviously, this is irrefutable on one level, seeing as this is the end of the book, but I'm interested in a different timeline here. Not one that orders events in chronological sequence from start to finish, but one that self-consciously subverts itself, that is only a timeline in the sense that it recognizes how it is not, and the ways it does not fit with the conventions of what a timeline should be. A major theme for Robinson throughout the book has been the absence and loss of things. For instance, the grandfather dying in the train wreck, the mother committing suicide, the grandmother dying, and eventually even Lucille being lost to Ruthie and going to mainstream society. And this absence and loss is construed, or rather the significance of this absence, is construed as so profound, so substantial, that it is almost a more tangible representation of that which is lacking than that thing in itself, so that the loss becomes more substantive than a presence. This theme is heavily addressed content-wise in the last few pages of Housekeeping, as Ruthie ruminates on a proliferation of potential lives for Lucille. She imagines her married in Boston, or housekeeping in Fingerbone, or tirelessly searching and hoping to find her and Sylvie everywhere she goes. These possibilities are made possible on the condition of her absence from Ruthie's day-to-day living, which is really the key here. This is where Robinson has been trying to get to, this place where absence constitutes presence. As she says, fact explains nothing. On the contrary, it is fact that requires explanation. And this is what the ending of Housekeeping does. It explains the story in a different way, in a voice unconcerned with so-called reality. Instead, it is the voice of possibility, a voice described very accurately by Keats's conception of negative capability, of indeterminacy, and in finding some determinacy, some satisfaction and fulfillment in settling on that, as Ruthie and Sylvie do. In these last pages, Ruthie contradicts herself many times. She claims to have never gone back to actually see the old house in Fingerbone where they lived, and yet she provides varying vivid descriptions of what has become of it. She paints a picture of Lucille as both deeply concerned by her well-being, even haunted by her absence, and also as fairly unconcerned and busy with her own affairs as a society woman in Boston. She even explains in such careful detail, down to the counting and recounting out of coins and sorting of odds and ends and smearing her fingers, her initials, with the finger on the glass, what she and Sylvie do not do, that we begin to think that in fact, despite all these details of negation, these things surely must be happening. Then again, these things aren't supposed to make sense. And even on a more basic level, Robinson's prose starts to break down towards the end. It loses its referentiality. By the end of the novel, we don't really even know what's going on. Robinson says they are nowhere in Boston, and nowhere becomes a more operative word than somewhere. Likewise, no one becomes a more important distinction than someone, or someone who actually someone is. Robinson says, no one watching this woman who slips cellophane packets of oyster crackers into her handbag. And so wait, we wonder, who is this woman? Perhaps Sylvie, Ruthie, both, or either? Robinson goes on to say, no one could know how her thoughts are thronged by our absence. But wait, R? Then R must be Ruthie and Sylvie, so this woman must be Lucille. So perhaps it's Lucille who makes the final comment. She does not watch, does not listen, does not wait, does not hope, and always for me and Sylvie? Always or never, does or does not. By this point, we must realize it is all of these options. It is possibility, immense possibility, of what might be when no options can be crossed out due to practicality. And because of this, I think the end of the book communicates a great hope, despite the fact that it has a generally depressing tenor. I think this is where Robinson would like to leave us, not physically anywhere or with anyone in specific, but with this state of mind, and it's a hopeful state of mind.